You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this, it is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. As well, there are two publishing houses, SteinerBooks.org in America and RudolfSteinerPress.com in England, who are the sole publishers of Steiner into English and have given me permission to do these recordings. Please consider patronizing them as well. This is a reading of Collected Works, Volume 100 by Rudolf Steiner. The book is entitled True Knowledge of the Christ, and it's composed of two cycles from 1907. We're on the first one, Theosophy and Rosicrucianism, which is 14 lectures, translated by Anna Moyse. This is Lecture 10, given in Kassel on the 25th of June, 1907. Today we'll consider how the old moon changed into our earth. But before that, we must refer to an important phenomenon in moon evolution itself. When the things I spoke of yesterday had happened, the old moon reunited with the sun itself. It dropped back again into the sun, as it were, so that there was a single body again. This then entered into a kind of sleep state of planetary existence, and the fourth metamorphosis finally emerged. It was not immediately the earth as we know it, for the earth state only came about after a long period of preparation. Looking at earth evolution, we have a good example of a cosmic law, which is that later states must in some respect recapitulate what had gone before. Before our earth could truly be our earth, after waking up, it had to recapitulate briefly the Saturn, Sun, and Moon states. This evolution was, however, slightly different from that of the three planets themselves. We learned that the first beginnings of the sensory apparatuses which we have existed on Saturn. At their first recapitulation, these sensory formations had advanced so far that a kind of human form developed, though the automatic sensory apparatus did not as yet have an ether body. On recapitulation of the sun state, the ether body came to be incorporated, and then the astral body at the third metamorphosis, the recapitulation of the moon state. In the third stage, sun and moon were again floating separately in cosmic space. The entities had developed to a slightly higher level, for they were more and more moving toward preparation for the time they would have to go through on Earth. The three bodies, which animal-human beings had on Moon, were joined by a fourth principle, the capital I. This did not happen very quickly, however. When the Earth went through its Saturn period, the whole human automatic sensory apparatus had to develop the form that made it possible for the eye to be taken in. The ether body had metamorphosed during recapitulation on Sun so that it could be the vehicle for the eye. The astral body had metamorphosed during moon recapitulation so that it might take in the eye. These principles were, in a way, waiting to take in an eye at that time. We have already had the separation of sun and moon. Then, when we are already coming closer to our own evolution, we have moon and earth splitting apart. The old moon turns into two bodies, one consisting of the worst forms of material, both entities and substances, was cast out into cosmic space. The other one is our present-day Earth. The things that would have been an obstacle to further development for the entities had to be eliminated. It was only after this that the Earth existed as an independent cosmic body. So, we have tremendous cosmic events before us. The Sun separating out Earth plus Moon, and then the Earth itself separating out from the Moon. These two events were the preparation for our present evolution. I have taken you to the point where our Earth became an independent globe. Let me now take you to this point from another side, so that you will know exactly where this point comes for our Earth. Let us now go back from the immediate present into the past, starting out from the form of the Earth which you all know. Even in modern science, reference is made to considerable differences between the earlier and the present appearance of the Earth. It is all based on hypothesis, of course. But we can be glad that natural science and spiritual science are seeing a little bit eye to eye on this point. The regions where we live today were vast virgin forests, and the climate was the way it is on the equator today. Huge creatures would be encountered there. According to modern scientists, the face of the Earth was very different then. The tropical climate in today's temperate regions was followed by the Ice Age, and so on. You will find this in any book on geology today. I am telling you this so you are aware of how we must very much bring to mind that the face of the Earth changes enormously through periods of time and then looks very different. Natural science, being limited to powers of deduction, its apparatuses, and so on, can look back only on the Earth's outward appearance for a number of millennia. When a seer looks back, he has to describe things in a somewhat different way, but harmony will one day be established between natural science and spiritual science. In natural science, attention is, even today, drawn to the fact which the seer has to insist on stating, which is that the face of the Earth has changed not only with regard to plants and so on, but that very different parts of the globe were land or sea in the past than they are today. Thus, Huxley has pointed out that a large part of Great Britain has been under water no less than four times. The face of our Earth has therefore looked very different many times over. In the journal Cosmos, number 10, you will, for instance, find an article on ancient Atlantis. A learned gentleman, who bases himself wholly on natural science, discussed the configuration of the European flora and fauna to demonstrate that the area which is today the Atlantic Ocean must have been land in the past, and that large parts of Africa must have been not land but ocean at that time. Instead, there was the land called Atlantis to the west of us, between Europe and America. The author may only be able to speak of a flora and a fauna, but that is perfectly natural. Even if there were any remains to be found of those ancients, our ancestors, it should be possible to find them on the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean. But it is not yet possible to explore the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean to that degree. A spiritual scientist looks back to the turning point of time and knows that the ancient Atlantis, of which even Plato still spoke, did exist at that time. Essentially, the whole area, which is ocean today, was ancient Atlantis, and the physical forebears of the human race of today did live there. They did, however, look very different from what people imagine in modern science. We simply must not compare them to present-day apes. Atlanteans differed greatly in soul and also body from present-day human beings, but they were not apes. Apes did not exist at that time. They only came later, and the way of it was that some human forms had then lagged behind at the level of development of that time and gone down to an even lower level. There is an error in Darwinism, and it is easy to see what it is. If someone sees two people and is told they are related, one of them deficient in many things, the other who has applied his abilities to good effect, an excellent person, he will not say, quote, they are of the same blood, and the excellent person therefore is a descendant of the deficient one, close quote. That, however, is the conclusion which is drawn in Darwinism. The excellent and the deficient person are, however, side by side. It is just that one has improved himself by using his abilities to good effect, and the other one has let them deteriorate and has grown decadent. This is also how apes, branched off from human beings, compare two human beings. An ape coming toward a human being looks to the latter like the caricature of a human being, and not a human being as such. During the time of Atlantis, a very different human race existed, which then developed to a higher level. Some entities remained behind. And because the earth changes, they too did not remain at that earlier level, but deteriorated and became that caricature of human beings, the race of apes. Lower entities are therefore higher ones that have fallen into decadence. Looking at the human beings on Atlantis, we will best understand how they lived by considering their qualities of soul. The things present-day human beings can do, think logically, do arithmetic, and so on, have all come later. Logical powers of judgment, all this was still utterly unknown to the Atlanteans. But they had one inner quality which has grown much less today, and that is a sheer inconceivable power of memory. To do sums, having learned to follow the rule of 2 + 2 = 4, and doing this again and again on the basis of personal judgment, that did not exist. But they were able to remember what happens when you put 2 and 2 together and recall this again and again. This was connected with the fact that that ancient continent was very different by nature. If you want to imagine this continent in its physical nature, you will best get an idea of it if you think of a valley in the mountains filled with dense water vapors and billowing mists. Atlanteans never knew air that was not filled with water. Their air was always heavy with water. The ancient Atlanteans retained a memory of this when they came over to Europe and called the land where their ancestors had lived Niflheim, land of mists. It was only toward the end of the last third of Atlantean times that human beings began to realize that they are an I. The potential had been there for a long time, and also a certain feel of it. But to say clearly and definitely, I am an I, that was something which they were able to do toward the end of the Atlantean age. This has to do with the relationship between ether body and physical body. Looking at these two bodies, you see that they are more or less congruent, though the ether body projects a little beyond the physical body. There is a place between the eyebrows that is a focus for certain powers and currents in the ether body. A quite specific point in the physical brain belongs to this. The two must be congruent, and that means the ability to be sentient of oneself as an I. Also the ability to do sums, make deductions, and so on. The two points in the head are not congruent in idiots, for instance. Human powers of judgment are no longer present in the right way the moment the two go apart. Among Atlanteans, it was normal for the two points to be apart. It is still like this with animals today. If you look at a horse's head, you find the two points well apart. Atlanteans had a projecting ether head, and the physical head had a receding forehead. But Atlanteans had something else, though this was lost again when the physical body was integrated into the ether body. They had developed an ancient dim clairvoyance, though they truly could not count to five. All judgment they had came from the power to remember back to an incredibly far distant past. And the old clairvoyance was an enhanced form of our present-day dream life. Think of this dream life enhanced to the highest degree, and you would ascend to the powers of vision, to the old, dim, dreamlike clairvoyance of the Atlanteans. Walking along, they would indeed see human beings within their physical outline, roughly the way we see them today, but in some respects still nebulous, vague. But they would see something else as well. When you meet someone today, you see nothing in particular of their inner nature, only as much as their faces show. If you get a darkling look, you assume that there is a sadness and are able to guess a bit about the person's inner life. But when an Atlantean met someone who had evil intentions toward him, a brownish red vision would appear. If the other loved him, he'd see a bluish red vision. It was a kind of color vision in tune with the other's state of mind. One still saw something of what was going on inside. When Atlanteans were walking along and a terribly reddish-brown mist would appear before them, they would run away, knowing that a dangerous animal, liable to devour them, was clearly coming toward them, even if still miles away. The ancient Atlantean clairvoyance even had a physical basis. Atlanteans would only consider their closest kin to belong to them, but to a much greater degree than was the case later on. Only very small communities that would scarcely extend beyond the immediate family. It was of prime importance to marry only within this small blood-related group. Marriage within the narrow blood brotherhood produced such a bloody mixture that the ether body could remain receptive to things spiritual. If the Atlanteans had attempted to marry outside the blood relationship, the powers of clairvoyance would have been suppressed. Astrally speaking, they would have turned into idiots. To stay within the blood brotherhoods was ethical and moral. Before one got a real feeling for one's individual I, one would altogether say, quote, "This is I," close quote, with regard to the whole blood brotherhood. Individuals felt themselves to belong to the blood relationship, like an individual finger on a hand. Something else also arose from this. Atlanteans would remember not only their own experiences, but also those of their father, grandfather, great-grandfather, and so forth, through generations, all the way to the founder of the family. Everything coming from there and continuing on was felt to be a single whole. This will show you the enormous powers of memory which Atlanteans developed. It was all based on memory. We shall hear later how breaking through the system of marriage within the clan meant that that power of memory was lost. A soul like that necessarily calls for a very different physical nature and also needs a different environment, like the Niflheim, which the ancient Germans did remember. Legends and myths definitely are not folk tales or fantasies. You are now able to see where those legends came from. The Atlanteans still had an old, dim clairvoyance, and the things that were later told to others and have survived did actually happen there, though they have often lost much in the telling, in the legends and myths of different nations. The eastward migration of Atlanteans has survived in a most wonderful way in a number of legends in Europe. On the ancient Atlantean continent, human beings were not able to call themselves I. They therefore also did not have the egotism which later became the basis of the social order. The Atlantean owned everything which all the blood relations possessed, and he would merely feel himself to be a part of this blood family. Then came the migration to the East. Awareness of being an I emerged more and more in individuals, and with it also egotism. Before, people lived much more in the outside world than within themselves. Nature also belonged to them. Now that they gained self-awareness, everything narrowed down around them. They came to be more and more separate from the world, more and more of a stranger to it, with the I emerging more and more strongly. This was at the same time connected with a natural event. When ancient Atlanteans looked up to the heavens, they could not see the sun the way we do. Dense mists filled the air. They would see a mighty halo in rainbow colors when looking at the sun or moon. Then came the time when Atlanteans did see the sun and the moon as such. But one phenomenon which they did not yet know at all was the rainbow. There was no rainbow in that atmosphere heavy with water vapors. Now you will recall that the flood on ancient Atlantis left behind large stretches of dry land. This has been preserved in a magnificent way in legend and particularly in the Bible. Just think of the profound truth found in the Bible, where it tells us how, when the waters had abated, Noah saw the rainbow. It was only when the old Atlantean mists had been cleared away that the sun emerged in the distinct form which it also has for human beings today. This went parallel to the narrowing down, the tying up of the human being to selfhood, I, nature. There are deep reasons why in the wisdom of the spirit, the light which fills space is called the etheric gold, and gold is seen as condensed sunlight. The ancient Atlanteans knew from their Atlantean teachers that sunlight and gold had something to do with one another. And this was the image they were given. Quote, sunlight, the sun's gold, emerges. It puts the ring around you which frees the self, so that you will no longer feel yourselves to be selfless in the world of nature. Close quote. For the Atlanteans, the self was still scattered in the clouds of mist. Now it lay around the individual in a ring. The mists of Atlantis cleared from the air, were pushed down and made their appearance as rivers in the west. The Rhine itself was nothing to the Atlantean descendants but the mists which have descended and now flow down. They could see the waters of the Rhine as still filled with sunlight. They would sense the sun's gold in the Rhine, sun's gold that had originally been selflessly active in ancient Atlantis. This was the treasure of the Nibelungs in the Rhine to them, and anyone who wanted to have the treasure of the Nibelungs for himself was the enemy. Richard Wagner did not have full awareness of this tremendous all-encompassing fact, but was inspired to represent it in music. Remember the mighty pedal point in E-flat major in the prelude to titled Das Rheingold. What is it but the point where the I entered into humanity? But just as a plant does not know the laws according to which it is growing, so the poet has no need to know. We have to see the creative artist as someone inspired by powers that are behind him. Here a significant artist felt what has to be part of the human being again. We see, therefore, that provision is made that in art, too, the spirit flows into our culture, which is also the basis of theosophy. It comes from two sides. This is how we must look at life as a whole. We have so far been tracing the human being back as far as Atlantis. Let us also consider some details. People then did not build their houses the way we do today. Something they were able to make use of to a much greater degree, something which existed in the natural world, were rock masses. And these were shaped, also using the trees which existed there, and put together. People thus had houses for their homes that looked like part of nature. The further back we go, the more do we find people endowed with clairvoyant powers, with conscious awareness, in the form of images. They would see the feelings of entities around them rising before the inner eye, EYE, in a visionary way. The will was also very different in the early part of the Atlantean age. Today, your will can spread out your fingers. It is something which is connected with the present-day power to envisage things. In early Atlantean times, the body was still a much softer mass. Atlanteans were able not only to stretch out their fingers, but also to make them longer or shorter. They would have found it easy to make their hand grow. If they had a plant that was small, they could make it grow by an effort of will. It was a kind of magic they had at their command. Their relationship to the animal world was also peculiar. They perceived something which later could no longer be perceived. Using their eye, EYE, they were able to exert a power of fascination on an animal. Going still further back, we come to a time when Atlantis also did not exist, and people lived on a continent which we call Lemuria. To the south of present-day Asia, this continent extended as far as Africa and Australia. This is where our ancestors lived when they were still Lemurians. Their bodies were much softer than those of the Atlanteans, and their will was much more powerfully developed. On the other hand, they lived on uncertain ground that was all the time thrown hither and thither in eruptions of fire, of volcanic forces. The ancient Lemuria was a kind of fire land. Going back to its beginnings, we come to a time when the skeletal system was only just beginning to separate out from the boneless mass. Then we come to the time where the earth altogether had not yet produced the mineral world of today. Everything which exists as mountains today was then in a continuous motion and flow. The further back we go in earth evolution, the higher are the temperatures we find. We then come to times when the configurations which are solid land today were flowing, as mercury or lead would do at a higher temperature today. Solidification only came for the Lemurians. The mists grew denser and denser. At that point, there was not only a sea of mist, but also a dense, incandescent mass of water vapors with all kinds of substances dissolved in them, whirling to and fro. There were, however, some parts in this water vapor where the possibility existed for the human ancestor of that time to live. But life forms were very different then. We are getting back to a time when human beings lived in a kind of prime ocean, in a warm, watery, and fiery element. The earth's core was as if surrounded by a prime ocean which contained the seeds for everything that would evolve later. So that is how things were on earth immediately after the moon had left and grown independent. We have got a glimpse of an evolution up to the point where the sun first separated from the earth and from the moon, then the moon from the earth, leaving the earth in the state I have just been describing. Tomorrow we'll take another look at this process, which we have just now put together in two of its aspects, and also at the progress of humanity and the earth right up to our time. The end of Lecture 10.